Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, folks, it is now or never. It is time to pay the piper, right? I mean, and by the way, who pays the piper calls the tune. So that's why you don't have any control over your government, because you haven't been putting anything into it. We all need to do this. And I don't mean to broad brush, because I know that there are plenty of you that are doing something. It's those who you know that don't. You know, they want a bitch. They want to complain. Forgive the French. That's the Marine in me. I have to go back and say, if you understand the medication I'm taking, sometimes my mouth works a little bit faster, because I usually never use expletives like that. So I can't say never. It's not that I don't think them, and it's not that I haven't used them. It's just that since I've retired from the Marine Corps, I've really been able to maintain a much better control over my reaction, mixed company or not, even by myself. And it really, it bothers me that I would use those types of things instead of speaking in a civil voice or so forth. But anyway, back to this whole thing of them griping and complaining. If they want to complain, then they have to be able to put into it. And it's not about just voting Republican. It is understanding what they have to do, because their job, and this is why we have to start off with the citizen's oath, it's everybody's job to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. And oh, by the way, just because somebody's elected doesn't automatically, you know, immune them from being an enemy. I'm telling you, the enemies have been within, and they're doing everything to seize control every way they possibly can. So, as you know, this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and as you can tell by my diving straight in without a long monologue that bleeds through the majority of the segment, I kind of want to get into the rest of the meat that we need to get into, because we're going to start talking about structures. We're going to start talking about, again, more detail of monetizing this show, how this show needs to be, I'm willing to make this show the vehicle of funding these different organizations, these different people. Now, so I am not a 501c3. My corporation is a limited liability corporation. And so those people who are out doing, you know, the finding and, you know, actually leading and so forth, those people will be receiving, so they have this tax liability. When they receive a 1099 from me for, you know, when I pay them their handsome ransom for the great work that they're doing, they need to be able to actually create an entity and or an organization, whether that be a corporation, and I highly recommend it not be a tax-sheltered organization. In other words, you're going to have to make sure you take the tax out of whatever it is you're doing and pay the tax first. Got to remember, the Revolutionary War wasn't fought by 501c3s. Everybody paid their taxes and everybody had that burden. Why is it today that there are so many people that are exempt and yet, you know, all the money that's really going to the good fight just isn't there? Because these tax-exempt statuses, or I should say organizations, they may serve a purpose, but it's not a good purpose, because it ties their hands. What can a corporation do? Can a corporation contribute? Can a corporation be philanthropic? Can a corporation... See, a corporation can do all the things that we need to be done. 501c3s can't. They can't. Some of them can't contribute to campaigns. Some of them can't do this. Some of them can't do that. So it's important that we understand, you know, these types of things as well. And we'll get into all of that. But as you know, this is the only show. I don't know of any other show that actually goes through the academic evidence and supporting, laying out a solution. First off, who's talking about solutions? I mean, a real tangible, and that, oh, you got to get into homeschooling. These theoretical solutions that if enough people do it, it might make a difference. We're talking about actually making differences here. We're talking about reclaiming the republic. And to do that, that's a very bold statement. To do that, there has to be a plan. And that plan, we're not even hiding this plan because it's your plan. This is what you should have been doing, and it's the obligation of every citizen, as we were just stating yesterday in our last episode. Go through the U.S. Citizen's Oath, and you will see right there for yourself that the first thing that a person does to become a citizen is abjure any loyalty to anything other than the Constitution, any other sovereignty, potent, whatever. You basically renounce and adjure your loyalty, and then you commit to supporting the Constitution against enemies foreign and domestic. Folks, we don't even hold our own citizens serious. We don't hold our own role and responsibility as a U.S. citizen seriously. So who do you blame? That's why I use a broad brush, and I include, when I say the broad brush, you, America, it's your fault. You're the ones that have not understood this moral obligation. It's actually a legal obligation. What would happen? What would happen if all of a sudden there was this shift and we got enough of the people to demand and we got compliance and all of a sudden, we started actually putting teeth into the consequences of citizens who failed to be involved in citizenry in holding government accountable. In other words, government got to the point to say, we demand you hold us accountable. We demand that you hold us accountable to that Constitution. Any one of us, you should, you know, line us up in a firing squad. Actually, the law has you just remove them and ban them for life. But you understand my point. I mean, I'm just getting a little melodramatic, but the point is, wouldn't that be a nation you'd want to live in? Wouldn't that be a nation that would actually aspire to enlightenment and actually, you know, be unfettered in all of its accomplishments and abilities to do great things? Because government is no longer the obstruction. Government is no longer the controls. Government is just lanes in the road. Here, you know, you can change your lane, you can do these things, you can take a right, you can take a left, and, you know, basically lay out the guidelines of what you can do, but not have a bunch of speed cops making these lanes and rules for purposes of revenue, but for standards, for good, safe standards or what have you. This goes to this conversation that I've had. Can government make you get a license to drive a car? Well, hold on. You say you have a right to drive. There are these sovereign citizen movements. There's these, you know, these assemblies, even committees of safety. Some of these paradigms out there say they can't do that. I'm here to tell you the government can. If government makes a road, it's like property, right? Whose property is it? Is it yours or is it government? It's ours. Okay, so does government have the ability to set standards for our use of these things that they've created for us? Absolutely they do. Now the question is, do they have the enumerated authority in their constitution to control those types of things? If they don't, they should, because we do want our states to create roads and highways, and they should have had that ability from the get-go. But you need to go through the Constitution. This is why understanding enumerated constitutions and going through and saying, yeah, you know what? This isn't enumerated. This needs to be changed. They need to have this power because we don't want government to tear up our roads and take away our access to everything. We want them to actually improve our throughput. Here's the problem. Because the globalists have gotten involved, this Agenda 2030, and traffic calming, this is why you're seeing roundabouts being instituted all over the place, because it forces you. You can't just go through a long green light. It forces you to slow down every time when you may be traveling on a road where you hardly ever, maybe only once a month, would actually be hit by that light, because that light stays green for the most part because the cars that come up are either taking a right or a left, and or, you know, or they have the ability to turn left, and it's really a yellow light on your green. So in other words, they just have to yield and make sure that, you know, they're not cutting you off. It's kind of like it's just a stop sign on the side of the road. The point in fact is, friends, that the only reason they put regulating lights on is because traffic gets to a point going each way that they do need to stop because it backs up because there's that much traffic on the ancillary road or the road that is crossing the main road, right? So why is it that they're putting these roundabouts in? The roundabouts is about changing behavior. Go read up on traffic calming. This is about them seizing control because government's job is to make sure that you can be as efficient as possible. You burn less electricity, you burn less gas. If you can be efficient and effective in getting from point A to point B with less energy and less time and giving you more resources, it makes you more productive. The more productive you are, the more money you make, and the more money that you're generating in revenue to the state. Why would the state, based on these promptings from the federal government, even support a reduction in state revenue if you're not going to be as productive? Why? What's the logic here? Oh, well, the state's not paying for it. But the federal government has no funding vehicle or constitutional standing to fund these types of things. And so if you can kind of see how all of these things are going, and this all started off with just licenses, but I'm just showing you that we need to understand enumerated constitutions and actually understand what your constitution says and hold your government accountable. We'll be right back after these two messages.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so stay tuned to the Facebook page if you are on Facebook. At least you may want to at least follow, because if you want to get notification, because things aren't happening fast enough, and I would love it if I could actually put up a notification of something you need to engage in right now. I mean, I've asked you to engage in this lawsuit, calling all of your attorney generals, calling all the attorney generals on that list and demanding that they engage in this lawsuit against Congress to force Congress to do their job, calling them out for violating the Constitution. So back to this, you getting involved, the citizenry and all of this. Actually, let me finish the obligatories. Sorry. Gary Smith, Fortitude Financial Coaching. If you need some support, I highly endorse all of these guys. These are my personal endorsements for Fortitude Financial Coaching, constitutioneducation.us with Keith Borders. Start sharing his content and helping people learn and understand the Constitution. Oh, I did not know that type of thing. As well as Timber Nation, getting good. I mean, you don't need to necessarily share, but I mean, if you want to get good furniture and you believe that what you've got is good, 9 times out of 10 people are very happy to endorse a good product. You'll love your your walnut desk like I do. You'll love the furniture that you get from these guys. It'll fulfill the role, it'll look beautiful, and it will last. Stan Kluwit regarding dust covers for your expensive equipment, whether that be gun loaders, whether that be ham radios, whether that be audio equipment, it doesn't matter. Check it out. Go to radiodustcovers.com and adlocal.com for your infrastructure or ISP type of services that you may need and may be pursuing, okay? So that's where we go. That's where we can get the, I'll just say, organizational support that you will need for domain certificates and all of that. Now, let me get back to what we really want to cover, because I could go on and on and on. But the fact of the matter is your state should have the power. If they have the ability to make roads, then that means that they have the ability to regulate those roads, which means that they have the ability to create standards. What happens is they all of a sudden create these nefarious things, or, and I'll just call it, well, we're going to start enforcing the law, and then they use this enforcement as a form of revenue. In other words, they're paying for the court system, and they're paying for government on going after people who violate the law. Well, what is the point of the law? Is the point of the law to make money, or is the point of the law for public safety? Because they're hypocritical in saying it's about public safety. So what needs to happen is that they need to get down to what the actual cost is for a ticket. And should the ticket actually cost the cost of the cop's time? Because bottom line, it's one thing that, because people commit crimes all the time when it comes to traffic law. How many people roll through a stop? How many people, you know, have to change a lane suddenly without using their blinker or do something that would be deemed unsafe? Well, the fact is that if there's not a cop, and we don't want, because it is unconstitutional to have law enforcement via camera, you have a right to face and challenge your accuser. And if your camera is accuser, you can't change or challenge them, and you can't actually question them and so forth. So what's important here is that we start putting the perspective on traffic regulations. And forgive me for diving into this, but I just want to point out that they have the ability to do this, and people really hate the fact that they'll cite you for speeding for hundreds of dollars or these other little rolling through a stop. I honestly believe that it should be a minor infraction if you commit a safety violation, regardless of the magnitude of the violation. If you cause no harm, the infraction should be minimal. In other words, $15 or something like that. It shouldn't be egregious to where you pay hundreds of dollars, because did somebody get hurt? No. However, when somebody does get hurt, it should be either you lose your license or you're on probation. Any type of violation, infraction, will cause you to lose your license, you know, within a year or 2 years. I mean, if you go through a red light and you kill somebody, then it should take a while before you get your license back, because you were that reckless. I'm okay with anybody coming up to an intersection and they're living the spirit of the law. They're looking and checking, and they go through that intersection, you know, safely, because they check both ways. You don't have to come to a complete stop. You know, there are places in Nebraska and out in the middle of America where you have a highway and then there's this road, a farm road intersection. And the people that travel down that road, there may be a total of 6 cars a day that use that road. And so why would they need? Because it's a playing field. They can see miles in either direction until the corn gets too tall or what have you. But for the most part, when you can actually see, visibly see that road is not occupied in any way, how much do you have to slow down to safely cross that road? If you have that level of command and profound information, you should be able to just boom, go right through that thing without even slowing down. And as far as I'm concerned, that's not negligence. I believe that as long as you have checked and verified and you can commit to that, but if you do go through and you hit somebody, you will pay a severe consequence, period. This is the same thing with, and this is what I love about, and I'm only using these as an example, so forgive me, I'm still in this rat hole, but seatbelts and helmets. I don't think that they should be making $200 on having a stop for you not wearing a seatbelt. The law should be that you should be wearing a seatbelt, and they shouldn't be able to pull you over to enforce just seatbelt law. It's kind of like in some places they have this laws that if they see you eating, they can't stop and pull you over. But if they pull you over for something else, like, you know, you're swerving or other behavior, and they see you're eating, then they can cite you for both. But the initial pullover can't be because of, and that's, I believe it's that law in Washington. And I'm okay with that. But the fact is, these laws, if you didn't cause harm, you didn't have an accident, there was no near accident, no evidence that there was this potential harm, that it was just, hey, you're not driving safe, then it should be, all of these citations should be really minimal, because it shouldn't be about reimbursing the law enforcement, because law enforcement is supposed to do other things. And as far as I'm concerned, traffic safety shouldn't be that big issue. It shouldn't. It should have nothing to do with how they staff, but it has become a revenue arm of enforcement. So if we want them to be focused on murders, we want them to be focused on recovering our crime, then we have to actually start putting, you know, the priority to where law enforcement possibly should be, where the sheriff should be. And that what that means is that in staffing of enforcement of laws, who is responsible for enforcing the laws of the land? Is it the sheriff? Is it your city police? Is it the state patrol or your highway patrol? Who is responsible for enforcing the laws of the land? You. The Constitution says the militia shall be called for the enforcement. So in other words, now here's a paradigm shift. Your state should actually, and your county should actually have every citizen identified as a potential servant in enforcing the law. And whether you are a servant in defending and or supporting the structure or what have you, they need to come up with a system and an ability to actually go, you know, and call you up and engage you and compensate you while you're in service. Imagine what that would do to the law enforcement, you know, sheriff's department, how many people they're staffing, if they didn't have to staff all of the people. Now, if you have a high crime rate, then, you know, there's reasons why you need to have that staff, especially, you know, victim crimes and those types of things. But if you have a high crime rate, you've got another problem. Again, this is looking downstream and reacting downstream. Well, we got to have more cops. Well, what's causing this? What is causing our crimes? Well, a lot has to do with our education. A lot has to do with the social engineering. There are things that are feeding and dumping crap into the water. And when we see it downstream, what government does is they respond to the problems that are floating in the river instead of fixing the problems upriver so that we don't have to live with the crap in the river. Does that make sense? So that's why we actually have to start really identifying the sources of these problems and how we can start moving to a point where we don't need law enforcement. Remember my Christmas program and why the New York the New York Police Department was created in 1828, 1827, something like that. It was in response to the riotous behavior of those ruffians that supported the holiday wintering, the drunk fest, the pagan holiday of the winter solstice. It had nothing to do with Christmas. The reason Christmas was utilized and highlighted was a way to change behavior. That's why you need to listen to that Christmas show, because I historically go through this and I help people understand that, you know, they start using things to deal with things downriver instead of dealing with things upriver. In other words, instead of educating people and helping them get enlightened, they created a police department and then started changing the paradigm and getting people to adopt Christianity's, this new form of Christianity holiday called Christmas. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so there was a reason why GR went down this path of roads, highways, traffic enforcement, and all these things. If you look at how the states established themselves under this constitutional republic, they didn't have these levels of control. As a matter of fact, when you went from, let's say, Missouri into Kansas on wagon, it's not like there were sheriffs sitting there on their horses, you know, ready to pull your wagon over and say, oh, we think you're going a little fast there. The people didn't even want to pay that for that kind of government. They were cheap. And as a matter of fact, they did their own policing. They, you know, the sheriff basically had posses, and those were people that were the upstanding residents of the county. And they knew each other. Everybody knew each other. And when you moved into town, they were going to get to know you. They weren't going to let you sit over there for a couple of years and let you function and operate without asking questions. They want to know what you're doing here. And in some ways, I myself even find that offensive when people want to know so much of your business. However, we do live in a civil society that is interdependent on, you know, each other and how we interact and so forth. And understanding people is an important part of society. Over time, though, over time, states began changing their model and design at the counties as well as at the state, which they started assuming or started providing services or doing things that they felt were necessary. Remember, the Constitution clearly states that all things that are not delegated to the federal government, this is the 10th Amendment, those things that are not delegated are reserved to the states. It doesn't mean the state, that doesn't mean that the states have the authority, but it's only reserved if the state assumes to do that, but the federal government can't do it at all, and it's up to the states if they want to do it. And the same mechanism for the state exists as it does for the federal government. Each state has an amendment process to their constitution. If they're going to assume any new role after the people have established that state government, if the government is going to establish a new role, responsibility, or power, they must amend their constitution. I have a real problem with the mob rule. It is not within the spirit of the Constitution, just allowing a democracy to dictate the laws of the land. 50% plus one is absolutely inappropriate in a Republican form of government. It is not representative of the counties, and the counties are legitimate forms of government. As I told you, this structure is a legitimate government, and we have to consider both the people as well as the government itself. So, over time, they started changing the model and designs at the county level as well as the state, which may not have been within the powers delegated in the state's constitution, which is why Republic Review, as it progresses, will purge these deviations, and I believe will ultimately beg state constitutional conventions across the union as the people begin to understand the importance of limiting the state's general government, which is the state government. And I also see the counties will ultimately begin possessing their own constitutions and will, in basic sense, model their counties in the same design as the general and state governments. And what I mean by that is that we have county legislators, and we want our counties to have most all the power. We don't want our states. We want to have the power closest to us of government. If government is going to be involved in healthcare, in safety, in, you know, traffic, and all these things, it is far better to have your own counties dictate. Now, it's okay for the state to take across the board standards of what could to be done, like signage and all those types of things, so that once, you know, the counties agree that they're going to, you know, have, you know, traffic speeds. Okay, well, then they kind of, and the federal government's role, or I should say the general government of the state's role, should be, okay, so everybody agrees that if you're in a rural area and there's no houses, you know, visibility, and start creating standards of how to set those speeds. The federal government has no authority to tell you and your state how fast you have to drive on an interstate, because that interstate should not be federally ran and federally managed. The only interstates that the federal government has a responsibility of maintaining but not managing are those interstates that will travel or traverse from your state capital to the nation's capital, to D.C. Those are the only roads that they have the authority and responsibility to maintain and support. The question is, in today's time and age, because so few people use those roads to travel to D.C., I mean, lots of people get on, let's say, I don't want to say Interstate 90, but 70. 70 is kind of one that goes across the center of the nation. The majority of the people that jump on Interstate 70 or Interstate 80 or Interstate 60, you know, these center interstates going from west to east, east to west. Majority of the people that get on there are so few in percentages, and I'd love to see what the actual numbers are, how many people actually are traversing all the way to D.C.? In other words, people are using this road for purposes that are other than the constitutional purpose, because when somebody wants to go to D.C., it's just easier and quicker to just jump on a plane, be there, and then come home. or go there and stay or what have you. Very few people travel of any distance in cars anymore, especially to a place like D.C. because, you know, parking sucks. Public transportation is pretty decent. I mean, when I travel nowadays, I try not to even get a rental car if I'm not having to do a lot of traveling when I get to where I'm at. If I'm right there in the city, like my wife and I, when my beautiful bride and I went to Boston, we did not get a rental car. We took a taxi to the hotel. The hotel was right there in the smack dab center. It was a Wyndham, and it was a beautiful hotel, and we were in walking distance or in cab distance to be able to go to where we needed to go. And it was less money than renting a car. Now, I know the paradigm of being an American, of having the convenience of being able to just go and jump in the car, you know, to just, let's take a trip. But that's it, most people don't need that, and we conceded that we didn't need that. It's nice to have, but over the time that I have traveled, we don't just sporadically on travel take a trip. Even though the flexibility is nice to have, we've never used it, and that's my point. We typically have spent money on rental cars that we could have actually saved ourselves a lot of money in that travel expense, because you're paying a daily fee. I mean, a rental car could add hundreds of dollars to your bill, and had you done taxis, it probably would have been less, half that, if that, or using public transportation. And in Boston, public transportation is pretty big. And it's okay. I mean, I understand that in some cities, you don't want to use public transportation. You just stick with cabs. Okay, there you go. But I do think it's good to experience the culture of that city through the, you know, through the that public transportation. But I digress. I've gone down this rat hole. The point is that governments were changing. Here's my question. Do the states have the constitutional latitude to change those governments? As long as they're not denying the representation of the people and not denying the representation of the counties based on the model that they adopted. All of these states adopted, all states came into the union, even Nebraska, who doesn't have who has a unicameral, no longer has a bicameral. They actually had a bicameral legislative body back until the 1930s. And in 1935, when the federal courts, right around the same time, the federal courts basically said, we're not going to recognize common law anymore. And it was after the 17th Amendment, they said, you know what? We don't need a bicameral legislative body to cut the cost of government. They just moved everything to the representations of the people in the Senate. Now, it's sad to see that. It's sad to see how they were allowed to pervert the essence of the Constitution in Nebraska. And I think Maine might be the other state. I'm not sure if they're bicameral or not. I don't think they're unicameral. I think only Nebraska is, if I remember correctly. I think when I've looked at the controls of the states, Nebraska is the only one. I think the difference in Nebraska and Maine, or the similarity, is how they distribute or control the Electoral College. But all of it is unconstitutional when we talk about that. That's a different rat hole. The fact of the matter is the states do have the authority to change it, but they don't have the authority to disenfranchise the sovereigns. And this is why we go through American republicanism and who are the sovereigns in America. Is it just the people? No. We recognize that we, the people, establish and foreordain governments to do a very specific thing for us. And when we do that, they become the sovereign of that thing. We, the people, cannot declare war. It requires Congress to do that. We, the people, cannot do something that the state, we've delegated to the state to do. So, it's important that we do not steal the representation of those sub-elements of government, such as our counties and such as our states. It's paramount that we maintain and protect their representation, which is why the 17th Amendment needs to be rescinded, and we need to rescind all of these unconstitutional rulings by the Supreme Court from, and I'm trying to remember, it'll come to me when we come back from the break. We'll be right back after this.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I also see that counties will ultimately, and this is why we need to start understanding constitutions and so forth. As I was saying, I see counties actually establishing a constitutional form of government instead of it being a administrative government for the state. Again, the whole design of our political system and political energies was to ensure that it was distributive, that all of the authority and all of the decisions that affected most of our lives was closest to the people. Well, I'm telling you, the state government isn't closest to me, and it's not closest to you. That's why the state government really needs to be reined in and brought into a framework of a general government like the federal government and the things that it needs to do in making sure that, one, you know, it's engaging with its other states as well as the federal, as well as international businesses and so forth. But we need to start placing context because the U.S. Constitution is solid. It doesn't need major changes. Does it need some changes? Yeah, the one change I will tell you is that we need to eliminate the ability for the states to rewrite the Constitution. We don't need it. If we need to make amendments, we should be able to and easily have, and almost every Constitution, as we go through the reading of the Constitution, we highlight those few amendments that the states didn't have any say or the states didn't drive that change. Remember, Prohibition, the Bill of Rights, the majority of the powerful amendments that we had to the Constitution were originated from the states. In other words, it didn't come from Congress trying to figure out how to meddle in our lives. It was the states saying, we think you need to do this for us. We want you to not do these things for us or against us, like the Bill of Rights. So I also see the counties ultimately need to possess these constitutions and model their counties into the same design as the general and state governments, to where almost all political energies will be closest to the people, a pure distributive force of government flowing to the people, in other words, flowing outward, thus destroying the unconstitutional status/communist form of government we're living in today. Because if we want to eliminate statism and state controls, We have to start moving to counties, and we have to start empowering counties to be able and giving them the latitude to choose. If you live in a county that says, we're not going to have any government-funded health care, you know, you can go to your churches and so forth, and we will help a little bit with what we can. But, and oh, by the way, yeah, they can do that with churches. And oh, by the way, they shouldn't be exclusive. They should set whatever the standards are for a church, you know, but I'm absolutely okay with churches taking over compassionate services. And actually, when they do take over those compassionate services, they start receiving that money, then they have to account to government for that money. Because all things that the people pay for must be accountable. Do you know what I'm saying? All things that they do in our name with our money must be transparent and accountable. So if they're giving it to the churches, they have to lay the lanes in the road, and they have to live within those lanes. But more importantly, when we look at constitutional governments, when we actually look at how these counties are framed, why is it that there's no executive? The sheriff should not be an executive. The sheriff should not be the ultimate say, because we don't want the executive toting around. It's almost like saying that the top cop of the nation is the president of the United States. They didn't create the top cop as the president. And so who was the top cop? Technically, it was the Treasury Department. The Treasury Department was the one that actually executed the taxations and enforced the taxes, because that was the only thing they could do, really. And so that's why the Treasury Department was the source of where the printing and secret services and, you know, the Treasury was kind of like the cop. The Department of Defense was an external and or a national defense. In other words, when we start looking at the role of the militia, there are two fundamental functions of a militia, right? One function is, and the primary function of a militia is holding public servants and government accountable to the law of the land. In other words, executing the laws of the union. It's right there first in the Constitution. Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15. Congress shall have the power to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the union and to suppress insurrections, which is basically enforcing the laws of the union. It's the other function that they have, which is a defense force, to where they actually pick up arms to either defend us against enemies, foreign or domestic. Basically, they didn't imagine that we would be overran within, that we would actually become enemies of ourselves and allow government to be our primary enemy of liberty. The Lord did give us a system that we can actually snap back quickly, because that's why I've been telling you that we have the constitutional framework of how these people are to behave. When you hear people calling them, you know, illegitimate, that your representatives are illegitimate, that's hyperbole, and that's dangerously seditious of what the framers and what we all have to hold and cling to as our legitimate government. Do not let people convince you otherwise. Because when they created this constitutional republic, they created all of this structure from the state legislatures down into the counties. Every state that joined the union was formed by the county representatives that formed the state. They created their own constitutions. Now, the federal government started manipulating and started going outside the bounds. But the bottom line is that the framework is spot on. These positions, these seats are legitimate. Maybe what people are doing with those seats and the things that they've created and the things they're enforcing are illegitimate. But the seats and the people are legitimate. And we have to hold them accountable. And in so doing, as we enforce or execute the laws of the union, execute the laws of the state, and execute these things that we have the rights to execute, now we can start putting rubber to the road. So I know this is starting to make sense. So the fact is this: the positions of representation throughout our republic and within the states are not unconstitutional, but the powers these bodies and branches, i.e. the executive, judiciary, and legislative, are exercising unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers. Consequently, the terms assemblies, conventions, and committees or councils of safety is stating that one is abandoning. So when you hear people say that we want to create these assemblies, these conventions and committees or councils of safety, is stating that one is abandoning the constitutional framework of our legitimate form of government. And in essence, I can assert that these things will be viewed as organizing a shadow government just as they did back when they did it with Britain. Technically, this is the definition of insurrection, with the terms and definitions of the Constitution being applied here. This is why Aaron Burr was charged of treason. He was actually guilty of it because this is what he was doing. He was trying to organize people into a shadow government to basically move the state of Louisiana and the people in that far west area away from the government when the government had duly and properly purchased it from the sovereign that owned it, France. So Jefferson, and actually when you get down to this whole treason trial, it was Marshall who played politics, who had a vendetta against Jefferson, and basically let Burr go. Burr was guilty as far as I'm concerned, and I believe that it would have created the history. And as a matter of fact, if you look at what Burr did, in contrast to what those men did in the Whiskey Rebellion who were convicted of treason, what Burr did was treasonous. These men weren't trying to create a shadow government. These men weren't trying to actually secede, you know, from the government itself. You know, it's one thing to try to secede from the government. Now, I'm not saying that a state government cannot secede, but what Burr was doing was not saying that the federal government was actually violating, because technically every state in the union today can secede because the federal government is gone so far outside the framework of the Constitution that it is out of control. However, they're out of control because the states have let this happen. And by abandoning the union would basically be an indictment against the states that this is a problem that the states allowed to happen. And then they basically turned its back. They become this runaway parent. And as far as I'm concerned, all parents have an obligation in reeling in this child, the federal government. They didn't know, for whatever reason, that this has happened and we're this far down this path. I don't care. We all have a responsibility to get that government back into the bottle, to get the genie in the bottle. So going down this path of these assemblies, conventions, and safety, you know, we got to be clear that when they started creating these things, it was really about trying to hold government accountable. They were organizing themselves. Technically, they were organizing the militia. Before they started creating the shadow government, the people started getting together and saying, hey, how can we do this? How can we hold them accountable? You can't do this to us. And started petitioning them and using the right of petitions. Because the right of petitions actually was established with the Magna Carta. So, folks, when we come back, we're going to get into the constitutional standing of what the militia and the people in organizing and formally forming a citizens vigilance militia, and not a paramilitary militia, in holding government accountable as well as the public servants. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the republic and we need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.